السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. الحمد لله الحمد لله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا المصطفى صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه وبارك وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم مسلمون. وقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى: وعباد الرحمن الذين يمشون على الأرض هونا وإذا خاطبهم الجاهلون قالوا سلاما. صدق الله العظيم.
علماء الكرام, most respected brothers in Islam, we are discussing the ayat of the Quran Sharif, وعباد الرحمن الذين يمشون على الأرض هونا وَإِذَا خَاطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا وَالَّذِينَ يَبِيتُونَ لِرَبِّهِمْ سُجَّدًا وَقِيَامًا.
We have discussed to some extent some of the relevant issues with regards to this verses. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala in these verses is describing the sifats and the qualities and the traits of those who claim to be the Ibadur Rahman, or those who are the true servants of Allah. We are not talking about those who just have, like us, Muslim names. We are talking about those who are truly servants of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, slaves of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, that they have submitted themselves to Allah totally, fully and wholly. There is no question of doubting anything that is in the Quran or the Sunnah in the lives of those people who are the true servants of Allah. So in these verses, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala talks about the walk of the Muslim. Allah ta'ala talks about the speech of the Muslim. Allah ta'ala describes the nights of a Muslim. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala describes the du'as of a Muslim. Those who are the true servants of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, how they spend their days, how they spend their nights, what kind of du'as they make, what is their attitude towards people, how they walk on the surface of this earth, what is their reaction when somebody has to use some abusive language or swear the person or criticize the person, then what is the reaction from those who are the Ibadur Rahman. It is coincidental that it seems to be connected with what we were talking last week, and that was about the akhlaq of Rasul-e-Pak sallallahu alaihi wasallam, because I mentioned that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, in the 13 years in Makkah Mukarrama, besides Iman, belief in Risalat, belief in the hereafter, Rasul-e-Pak sallallahu alayhi wasalam and his companions, what was distinguishing in their life was their akhlaq. It was because of this akhlaq that they were able to win over more and more people into the fold of Islam. Rasul-e-Pak sallallahu alaihi wasallam, as these people were accepting Islam, he was teaching them more and more akhlaq. And we can see that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam's akhlaq, his character, it was such that even his enemies were forced to believe that he was the Rasul of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. So in the early days, this is the effort that was being made on akhlaq. With sincere and firm belief in Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, it was akhlaq. Because the moment a person accepted Islam at the hands of Rasul-e-Pak sallallahu alaihi wasallam, then his iman became so perfect and so complete that people until the day of Qiyamah will not be able to go anywhere near that kind of iman. Although at that time, as I mentioned, even the Quran Sharif was not completely revealed, but still those who accepted Islam at that time, they knew fully well that this acceptance of Islam means that we must be prepared for torture, we must be prepared for persecution, we must be prepared for hardships, we must be prepared to sacrifice anything and everything as directed by Allah and His Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam. They knew that. Therefore, they didn't accept Islam easily. It was not a question of just being born in a Muslim home and you are a Muslim. After that, we do anything we feel like, but we are still Muslims. It was not that. There, it was a question of consciously studying. What is Islam? What are we being invited towards? What are we being called towards? And what change in our lives will have to come after we have accepted Islam? They did not just read Kalima La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah, because they knew the meaning of the Kalima La ilaha illallah better than we do. But they hesitated. Why was this hesitation? Why did it take them so long, so many of them, just to say La ilaha illallah? If that is all Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam was inviting towards, that Qulu La ilaha illallah tuflihu, that say La ilaha illallah and you will be successful. So there was no need for any opposition, there was no need for any fight, there was no need for any torture and persecution of the Muslims. It was an easy thing. They would have said, well, okay, we can also say it, La ilaha illallah, and we will be successful. But they knew the implications of saying this, La ilaha illallah. So therefore we can see that in Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's early life in Makkah Mukarramah, when he was inviting the people, it was this akhlaq that was really the attractive force. In fact, it takes me back to another incident to which my mind suddenly switches over. And that is the incident which I have mentioned here some years ago, and that was about Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha. But since it comes to mind, what does it cost to repeat? In fact, it is for our benefit that we listen to these incidents repeatedly. That if you look at akhlaq, because we are on the subject of akhlaq, that if you look at akhlaq, it was the same thing that Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha mentioned to Nabi Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam when he came from the cave of Hira. And he related the incident of the coming of Hazrat Jibreel alayhi salatu wasalam, and he expressed great fear. The Muhaddiseen have explained that what this fear was all about. There are many explanations, but one of the explanations is this, that this fear that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam expressed was the fear that when he is going to convey this message, then he will be rejected, because he will be asking them to leave the worship of all gods and worship one God. Now this was something very difficult to explain to those people who were soaked in the worship of idols. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam was fearing that now this is such a burden, it is such a responsibility, that he must take this Quran now and convey it to the people. And he was not going to convey it to an audience of this kind, who have already believed in Allah and his Rasul sallallahu alayhi wasalam. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam was going to take that message and go and convey it to those people who were soaked, as I said, in idol worship, and those who had so many different gods and so many different elahs, and those who believed that there was a different god for every different thing. Now to go and tell them that worship one Allah, He is the creator of the universe, He is the giver of life and death, He is the creator of the oceans, He is the creator of the heavens and earth, He is the creator of the moon and stars, He is the creator of everything. Now this was going to be a very difficult message to give to them. So this was the fear that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam came and expressed to Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha after he received the first revelation in the cave of Hira. Iqra' bismi rabbika allazi khalaq, khalaq al-insana min alaq. There is no time to go into the details of that incident, but just by the way, those people who have been to Makkah Mukarramah, and may Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us all the opportunity to visit Makkah Mukarramah and Madinah Tayyibah with sincerity and receive from those places the true lessons, or take from those places the true lessons. In any case, those who have been there, they know that this cave of Hira is on Jabal Nur, and it is right on top, and it's a small triangular cubicle kind of thing in which just one person can sit comfortably, and two people with a little bit of force, they can squeeze in. Now imagine Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam is going right up onto that mountain, and even the road was not anything very comfortable to reach there. What a climb. And Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam is there on which night? It is the 27th night of Ramadan, according to most, as the Quran Sharif itself says, Inna anzalnahu fi laylatil qadr. Verily we reveal the Quran Sharif in the night of Qadr. So it was the night of Qadr, and we know that the night of Qadr mostly is on the 27th night of Ramadan. So the 27th night, there's no bright moon that is shining there. It's totally dark. And imagine one person right on top of the mountain, where there is no lamp, where there is no light, where there is no bulb or globe, nothing of that sort, and he is there all alone. And suddenly it's all lit up, and Hazrat Jibreel alayhi salatu wasalam comes, and he squeezes him and tells him, Iqra. If we were in his place, we would have jumped from the mountain with fright.
It was only Nabi alayhi salatu wa salam that he could have taken that pressure. So it is not an easy thing. We just read it and we forget about it and we think it was simple as that. Just picture ourselves in a dark night, right on the top of a mountain and in a small cave, nobody there. And suddenly we see this image, or we see Hazrat Jibreel alayhi salatu wa salam in this form. What would we have done? So that is another fear. But in any case, when he came back home, so he told Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, zammiluni, zammiluni, cover me up, we all know that incident. But immediately after that, when he expressed this fear, that how am I going to convey now? It is not an easy thing. This responsibility which came onto his shoulders, it was not an easy thing to convey it now to the kuffar and to the mushrikeen. There was going to be tremendous amount of opposition. So the fear was that if Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala's assistance and Allah ta'ala's help was not going to be with him, then it will be a failure. And any person who takes on a responsibility, then he does not like that he should fail. It will cause embarrassment, it will bring about humiliation. From there we also learn that we should not take upon ourselves so much of burden which we cannot bear. Lots of people have got a lot of interest in doing everything. And after that they cannot do justice to everything. And then after that they suffer embarrassment, humiliation and shame. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, look at the words with which Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha consoles him. Because we are talking about akhlaq of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, that in the early years of Makkah Mukarramah, this is what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam was teaching them all the time. And not only teaching them, but each and every companion of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, he could have made a mistake because that was the period of tarbiyah. I explained this in one of my talks on Sunday nights that we have here. If you have the time, come and spend 45 minutes, you'll learn something, inshallah, and it'll benefit you and benefit me too. But what I'm saying is this, that it was explained that there is a period of tarbiyah, that in the time of Rasul-e-Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, some sahabi committed zina, some sahabi committed theft, some sahabi committed some other mistake. Now this was, they came into Islam, and then still their tarbiyah was being made, and the Quran Sharif was revealed upon Nabi alayhi salatu wa sallam, and all those things which did not affect nubuwat as such. For example, a mistake in namaz. Now that did not affect the nubuwat of Rasul-e-Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam made a mistake in namaz, so that the ummah may come to know that if you make a mistake in namaz, what should be done? How you should make sajda sahwa? So for the benefit of the ummah, certain mistakes Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam was made to make, so that the ummah may come to know what should we do under certain circumstances. But only those mistakes and those errors which did not affect his nubuwat. But if it had been theft, na'uzu billah, if a Nabi had to commit theft, what would we have thought of that Nabi? So here the Sahaba, some of them, the Muhaddiseen say that they sacrificed themselves, that who could have had more strong iman than them? But suddenly somebody commits some theft or somebody commits zina, again to show the ummah that if you in your time have to commit zina, then what should be your condition? After adultery or after fornication or after some theft or after some mistake or error in your life, what kind of tawbah you must make, that that woman is prepared to be stoned to death, but she says, I do not wish to be punished in the hereafter. Is it an easy thing? If it was not that strong iman, then what would have brought her back repeatedly to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam and say that even the child is born, the child is now eating bread, and now punish me, have me stoned to death, until finally Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam had to implement. This was not an ordinary thing. It shows that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, the moment a person believed in him, his iman became so perfect that we cannot match that iman. Yes, these accidental mistakes that they made, we will find just a few in the books of hadith, here and there. And that too was for the purpose of tarbiyah, that if this happens in the society, then we will not say that in the time of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, no such incident took place, so therefore it is not possible to implement such a law. So that was the period of tarbiyah. But nobody can point a finger, nobody, not one person can prove any authentic incident from any book of authentic history about any sahabi committing adultery, committing theft, or committing any other major sin after the demise of Rasul-e-Pak sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Because the period of tarbiyah was completed and now they were given the certificates by Allah and his Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. In the plains of Arafat, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, when the last verses of the Quran Sharif were revealed upon him, then he told them that now you take it and move into the world and convey it. And Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala declared, radiyallahu anhum wa radu an,
They were pleased with Allah and Allah was pleased with them, each and every one of his companions. So this akhlaq that we are talking about, Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, the wife of Rasul Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, she has seen Nabi alayhi salatu wa sallam's night, she has seen Nabi alayhi salatu wa sallam's day, she has seen Nabi alayhi salatu wa sallam's actions and deeds. And now when he comes and when he tells to his wife, Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, that this is what happened in that cave and I've got this fear, immediately she consoles him in what beautiful words. She said, Wallahi la yukhzik Allahu abada. I can take qasam in that Allah that he will never allow any disgrace, any humiliation to come upon you. Now she is telling him this. The Quran, just one verse has been revealed. And he comes and conveys it to Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha. Immediately she is reminding Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, or consoling Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, not with some miracles of the past prophets, that they were prophets in the past and they showed a lot of miracles, so inshallah you will also get a lot of miracles. No. She is consoling him again with that same akhlaq that we are talking about, which is lacking in us. We make some namaz, we keep some fast, we go for hajj and we make umrah upon umrah, and we give some charities and some donations. All these things we do. But akhlaq is something else. It is a condition of the heart and it is reflected in a person's life. Tawazu or humility does not mean that we just bow down and make salam to everybody. That's not tawazu. If that person who is bowing down and making salam, still in his heart he's got pride that I am very humble, then it shows that that person hasn't got humility. Because if a person is fast asleep and he knows that he is fast asleep, then is he fast asleep? The person who is fast asleep, but he knows fully well that he is fast asleep, he's aware of it, that he is fast asleep, then he's not fast asleep. So the person who has got this tawazu, it is a trait of the heart, and then it will reflect in his actions, that this person was bowing down and making salam every time, but if somebody tells him one harsh word, or somebody criticizes him, or somebody teases him, then see what is the reaction. So if there was tawazu in the heart, then it will reflect in his life. Hazrat Ismail Shaheed Rahmatullah Alayh, he delivered a talk in the Jami Masjid of Delhi, and thousands of people attended his talk, and he had murids by the thousands. Now imagine at such a time, if somebody has to criticize that sheikh or that peer, then what would be the reaction? Now he's coming out from there, and one person tells him that, what are you giving speech, you are a harami. Now at that time, if somebody else was there, he would have told his murids, he said, bash this person and finish him up. But look at Hazrat Ismail Shaheed Rahmatullah Alayh, that great wali of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. He straight away says, hold on, nobody must get angry, nobody must say anything. He has sworn me, I will give the reply. And then he tells that person in with great humility, he says, I think you are mistaken, because the witnesses to my mother's marriage to my father are still living and they are in Delhi. That was his reply. Look at Hazrat Hud alayhi salatu wasalam. What did his people tell him? Inna lanaraka lafi safahati. That we find you to be stupid, na'uzubillah. They're telling a Nabi of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala that we find you to be very stupid, very foolish. If it had been one of us, what would have been our reaction? But the only reply that Hazrat Hud alayhi salatu wasalam gives to his people, he says that, no, you are mistaken, I am not stupid. I am Rasulun min Rabbil Alameen. I am a Rasul from Rabbul Alameen. Teaching us a lesson that at such a time, and this is again connected to that first part of that ayat, وَالَّذِينَ يَمْشُونَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ هَوْنَا وَإِذَا خَاطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا. That when the ignorant address them, they say salam, meaning that they give a nice reply or they distance themselves, but they do not go and seek revenge. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam seeking revenge was solely for the sake of deen and Islam. Otherwise, anybody abused him in his personal capacity, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam never ever took revenge. In the tafsir of the ayat, it is mentioned that الَّذِي يَنْزُرُ إِلَىٰ مَجَارِ الْقَضَىٰ لَا يُفْنِي أَيَّامُهُ بِمَخَاسِمَةِ النَّاسِ. That the person whose sight is on from where the qaza comes down, from Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, is the one who sends down the decisions on this earth. So the person whose eyes are there, he will not waste his time fighting with people. Yes, if there is a problem, he will try and resolve it. If the person is not paying his debt, he will seek it from that person. He will try and find ways of getting his money back. That we are not saying it is haram. It is permissible. But what I am saying is that over silly little things, to enter into arguments and fisticuffs and fights, as is the common thing in our society today, and not only outside the masjid but even inside the masjid. And as I mentioned, that even if you go to the Haram Sharif, you will find arguments and fights in Masjid Nabawi alayhi salatu wasalam over just a person came and took your place, or the person just stepped over the shoulders and accidentally he hurt the person, or any little thing. And there will be such arguments that sometimes voices are raised. So this is where that tawazu comes in, that humility comes in there. So I was discussing Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, what can I do? There are so many things that come to mind that we do not know which one to take and what to leave at times. Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, she tells Rasulullah Paak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, that wallahi la yuhzik Allahu abada. I can take qasam in Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Allah will not cause any disgrace and humiliation to come upon you, O Nabi of Allah. Because she knew now that he had been given that nubuwat by Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. She was the first person to accept his nubuwat. The last person who normally accepts a husband to be pious and righteous and wali of Allah is the wife, because she knows the husband very well. But if Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, she says immediately, she says that Allah will not allow any embarrassment, disgrace and humiliation to come upon you. Why? And then she lists his beautiful qualities. Wallahi la yukhzik Allahu abada innaka latasilur rahim. The first thing that she mentions is that you maintain the family ties. You maintain the family ties. Family ties, you do not snap, you do not break. Because the first people that we come into contact with, the first person that the child comes into contact with normally is the mother. That's the family. Unless the child is taken away immediately, some incidents like that take place. But generally, the child, the first contact that the child builds up is with the mother. It's in the mother's lap that the child normally grows up. So now that's a family member, mother. The father who is providing the sustenance, who is bringing the provisions, who is bringing the bread and milk, and who is working from the morning till the evening, and checking that the nourishment is provided for the child. So the father is the second one that the child is normally getting acquainted with. Then will be brothers and sisters. Then there will be uncles and aunts. There will be nieces and nephews as the child grows up, gets to know more and more. But if we have to look at it, the first people that the child comes into contact with are the family members. That is why Allah Ta'ala has placed so much of emphasis on this relationship with family members. At the end of the second khutbah, every Jummah we hear the ayat, the translation and the commentary of which you have also heard many times. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْمُرُ بِالْعَدْلِ وَالْإِحْسَانِ وَإِيْتَاءِ ذِي الْقُرْبَى. So this is something that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala places great emphasis on. And Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, the first thing that she mentions, that why Allah ta'ala will not allow any disgrace and humiliation to come upon you, is that you maintain these family ties. Brothers, there are so many people, they will give charities through people to people throughout the world. Any disaster in any part of the world, and they will open up their hearts and their pockets. But in their own home, there could be an aunt that is suffering. In the neighborhood, there could be a granny that is suffering. In their locality or in some other city or town, it could be their sister who has become a widow and she has got nobody to care for her. It could be a nephew or a cousin or an uncle who is suffering because there is unemployment and the person does not have even the basic necessities to live upon. But we will ignore all those people. Why? Because we get no response from them of thanks. Why do we ignore them? Because they will not raise their hands and salute us every time. They will not send us messages of thanks that, mashallah, I really appreciate that my uncle sent me so much of money, or my brother considered me. Because they are family members, after giving them to, probably you might get in return that if this person sent me 500 rand, what great thing did he do? He's sitting with millions. That's probably the reaction you may have. That is why it becomes so important to care for the family members. Because now it will be solely for the pleasure of Allah that this person is going to do it. Because to give to friends, they will congratulate you and thank you 1,000 times. When you go and spend on friends when you are on a journey, then they will thank you so many times that I thank you so much that you spent on me in this journey. But go and spend for those family members who are enemies of yours, then it will show that what kind of akhlaq we have got. So without akhlaq, Islam, we cannot pass on to the people. They are not going to come and see how beautiful namaz we read in the masjid. They are not going to come and see how beautiful fast we keep in Ramadan. They are not going to see what a beautiful hajj we make in Makkah Mukarramah. They are going to see our relationship with them, our dealings with them, our akhlaq with them. I will stop here because the time has expired. Otherwise, there is a flood of things that are coming into my mind. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give me an opportunity to continue, inshallah, in a fortnight's time. But this is what we have to learn. The moment we learn akhlaq, people will come easily into the fold of Islam, and we will first of all win over our close family members to our side. Otherwise, they are the first ones we will be distancing from us when our akhlaq is going to be bad and poor. May Allah ta'ala give me first of all the tawfiq, and each and every one of us and the entire ummah. May Allah ta'ala remove the hardships, difficulties and problems that our brothers and sisters in Kosovo and other parts of the world are suffering. May Allah ta'ala make it extremely easy for them and for the entire ummah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin.